Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. President Biden last week proposed a multi-billion dollar American Families Plan, which lays out major investments in childcare, 2 years of universal preschool, and the guarantee that low and middle-income families would pay no more than 7% of their income on childcare for young children. What does this mean for the beleaguered childcare industry? Right now, the picture in Maryland is bleak. Half of providers say they may have to close for good if families keep their kids home for the next 6 months. On average, providers report a weekly loss of more than $8,500 in revenue. That's according to research released last month by the nonprofit Maryland Family Network. The report is titled "Caring During COVID: The Impact of the Pandemic on Child Care Providers." A note, the Maryland Family Network underwrites the first 5 years, a weekly program on WYPR. Joining me is the network's executive director, Laura Wheeldryer. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sheila.
Your organization helps families locate childcare and provides resources for childcare providers. The pandemic has hit childcare so hard. Broadly, how have childcare providers in Maryland, whether they are large chains or small home-based centers, how have they been coping?
Great question. It has been a pretty terrible year for childcare. And of course, that's true of many industries. Even prior to the pandemic, childcare was not in great shape. Childcare is incredibly expensive for families, and yet childcare providers are some of the lowest paid hourly wage earners in the country, and they are predominantly Black and brown women. And so there's a lot of complexity to the financial landscape of childcare that's wrapped up in what we're going to talk about today. But specifically, I would say kind of high level, the two things that have hit childcare so terribly hard in the last year, and you have already alluded to it with some of the data from our survey and our report, but we have decreased enrollment of children in childcare and increased cost. And obviously we should talk a lot more about what's underneath those statements, but enrollment, it is what drives revenue in childcare. So to drastically decrease enrollment, of course, last spring there was no enrollment when childcare was closed for health and safety concerns. But even now, although childcare is reopened, families have not re-enrolled their children. So enrollment is significantly decreased. And at the same time, costs are hugely increased. So in a nutshell, that's what's going on that makes the future of childcare so precarious in Maryland.
And let me just dig a little bit into each of those. Where is enrollment now? What are the numbers?
Childcare is really a private industry driven by the private market. It is not something that gets a significant amount of public investment, and it's not organized into a system the way schools are, where there is a common data system and common data collected so that you can check on things like enrollment or attendance or free and reduced lunch count or performance. None of that is collected systematically for childcare. So what we know, we really know anecdotally, with a few pieces of data that kind of shore up the anecdotal. But basically, probably 3/4 of providers have reported decreased enrollment. We happen to be at Maryland Family Network running a pilot program with some providers in Montgomery County, Baltimore City, and Prince George's County, and we're tracking their enrollment, and it is down by 50 to 75% in those providers.
So enrollment is down, but yet you said costs are up?
Yes, costs are up. So in our statewide survey that was done in late January of 2021, we asked providers, what were they spending money on? What was driving these increased costs, and to quantify what they were spending? What's driving the increased cost is, some of it will be very common sense. It's the cost of PPE. They had to buy thermometers. They have to buy cases of masks. They have to buy Lysol wipes and bleach. They also have needed additional staff because right now, parents can't go inside of childcare. They have to drop children, you know, curbside drop off and pick up, which means there have to be staff to greet children, take their temperatures, bring them inside. And then children and adults need to stay together in small pods. So that has also put pressure on increased staffing. According to our survey, providers around the state are reporting an increase of $5,300 per month per site since March 2020.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Laura Wheeldryer, Executive Director of the nonprofit Maryland Family Network, about the challenges the pandemic presented for childcare providers. What kind of financial relief at the federal and state levels is currently available for providers?
There's been some attention to relief for childcare at the local level, at the state level, and the federal level. So let me start with the federal level, which has been the big pots of money. You will recall in December that Congress passed the CARES Act, and some of that money went to relief for childcare. So Maryland's share of that money was $130 million. MSDE took that money and used $60 million to give grants directly to providers. That's actually going on right now. They are in the process of issuing checks or direct deposit to providers out of that money from December. Then in the last few months, we have the American Rescue Plan Act, which puts a lot of money nationally into childcare. Again, Maryland's share of that money is $502 million. That is like once in a generation investment in childcare. So just to break down the $502 million, we're still waiting for final guidance from the feds, but we have some general ideas that $300 million of that money will be, again, for direct grants to providers. And $200 million of that money will be about investment in the childcare industry or the childcare system. So it's really intended to say 2 years from now, when the money is gone, how is Maryland better off in terms of access and affordability of childcare than we are right now? So that's the biggest pot of money that is coming, and it goes to the state and it's dispersed through the state. Prior to this federal money, the state made some investments themselves for, I'll just name three quick examples. One is, you know, the state paid for childcare for the children of essential personnel last spring when everything was closed. That was a very significant investment. They have made small grants available to offset the cost of cleaning supplies and PPE a couple of times in the last year. And then last spring, until childcare was fully allowed to reopen in summer of 2020, the state paid for childcare subsidy based on enrollment, not attendance, because obviously kids weren't attending. So instead of punishing the providers, they paid those fees based on enrollment, which was a huge and tremendous support to providers. So what everyone is recognizes the effort the state has made. But I don't want to leave out the locals. A few counties have made some direct grants to providers, including Baltimore City, Montgomery, Howard, Anne Arundel, Prince George's, Frederick, I might be missing one or two, but that is truly amazing when you think about all of the competing priorities for public funds right now. So I can't help but give a shout out to those local governments.
And of course, everything you've been talking about is not the latest proposal from President Biden. What is your reaction to the direct support to low and middle income families in the proposed American Families Plan?
First, let me say the devil is always in the details. So I await more information, but with a lot of hope and optimism that finally childcare is being recognized as a public good, or as we like to say, it's the workforce behind the workforce. So I mentioned that childcare is not part of a system the way schools are. The most significant public investment in childcare is something called childcare subsidy, which is financial relief for low and middle income parents. Every state sets their own eligibility criteria with guidance from the federal government. And then the feds and state governments invest in making this funding available to families. You apply, and based on your income, if you meet criteria, you get, you know, a weekly or monthly voucher towards childcare. And there's a lot of complexities to this childcare subsidy program, but I think everyone could agree that more money for that program to either pay higher rates of reimbursement or allow additional families into the program would be a wonderful thing. Many states have lengthy waiting lists for families to get into the childcare subsidy program. That's one issue. The second issue is many providers don't accept childcare subsidy because it is not the full amount that they charge for tuition. And it is, you know, a bureaucratic, onerous, paperwork heavy process. So anything to overcome both sides of that coin would be good news for children, for parents, and for childcare providers.
President Biden's proposal would require child care providers to pay a minimum $15 an hour wage to workers in their centers. Would this raise costs for families? Would this raise costs for providers?
Yeah. So it's certainly welcome news for providers. I mean, finding people who want to make up the workforce of child care is a huge issue. And nationally, child care providers make $11 an hour right now. So this would be a significant raise. I think the trick is exactly what you just said. We have to figure out how to do it without passing the cost on to families, because child care is already way out of whack with what economists say that it should be. The federal government recommends that families should not be spending more than 7% of their family income on child care. And even that, you know, doesn't sound like nothing. But more than 30 states in this country, the cost of young child's child care is the equivalent of the cost of tuition at their public university. So childcare is so expensive, and yet I just told you that childcare providers make $11 an hour. So what's going on? There's nothing in this business model right now, which is flawed and needs to be reimagined, that is linked to what is the actual cost of providing care. It can't be driven by what can the market bear, what can families pay. They're already strapped and paying more than the federal government recommends. I don't think anybody has figured this out, Sheila. I wish I could point to a state or a country and say, this is how to do it. But what we're going to have to grapple with is the investment of public funds to both support the industry of childcare and keep that from being a financial pass-through to parents.
Laura, thanks for this overview. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
Laura Wheeldryer is executive director of the nonprofit Maryland Family Network. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have a link to its report, Caring During COVID, the Impact of the Pandemic on Child Care Providers. Quick break, and when we're back, a provider's perspective. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned. On the Record on WIPR.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Vaccination rates are rising, schools are reopening for in-person learning, and childcare providers are still reeling from the pandemic. How have operators been shouldering the financial burdens of lost tuition and personal protective equipment? What resources do they need? With me is Christina Push, executive director of the Maryland State Child Care Association, which represents 4,800 infant, toddler, and pre-kindergarten community-based providers. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you, Sheila. Glad to be here.
And Chris's Black Lab Beau is with us, too. And also joining us is Imani Angela Rose, director and co-owner of Joshua's Place, a child care center in Northwest Baltimore. Welcome, Imani.
Thank you for having me, and I'm glad to be here as well.
Imani, what have been the biggest challenges for your child care center over the past year?
Over the past year, the biggest challenges, of course, was our limited capacity, which also limited our income. This was a new pandemic for everyone, so we knew we had to go by certain guidelines and restrictions, and we understood that. But then as we began to move forward, we needed better guidance from MSDE and from our health department to help us to begin to move forward with capacity so that we can increase our revenue and also continue to help serve more of the children in Baltimore City.
Well, when you say limited enrollment, how limited?
Very limited. We began at 10 students per classroom total. So even if you were licensed for 50, you were almost still held to a 10-person capacity. And there's no way that you can survive as a business with that.
What are the limitations now?
Close to our capacity, but we still have to maintain the social distancing restrictions, which is appropriate when you can, but that still does limit the number of children you can bring into your center. So even if we could go to our full capacity, you really can't because of the space that you need. And many of us just don't have the space to just have children all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what else are you hearing from providers?
So the struggle is, you know, the federal government has stepped up and we've lobbied, you know, with our own senators here, Chris Van Hollen, Ben Cardin and such, but they have been able to provide over $50 billion to the childcare industry. But we haven't seen the money directly to the childcare businesses that are private businesses that provide a public service, right? So in the beginning, when the CARES Act, you know, came out and we were able, again, limited as Imani mentioned, we really needed the support. And what the superintendent decided to do is pay for all essential childcare workers in our state, which does include the people that provide the childcare, but they were able to get full tuition paid by the state. So, and there was quite an extensive list. And so there was a flat fee that was provided to a program of choice for those essential personnel. But in some counties and in the city and some areas, it didn't cover the tuition they would typically charge. And in other cases, it was more than they would typically charge, right? So there was some, you know, discrepancy. And then it took almost 6 weeks to get the money. And in our business, because all of it falls on the shoulders of the families and they weren't allowed to pay us anything, the essential workers were not allowed to give us money or we would have been penalized or shut down. We had to wait for that money. And some people, you know, had to dip into their savings or like wiped out their checking account or use credit cards, advances to pay their staff while they waited. Because in our business, we have razor thin margins. That's across the country, not just in Maryland. We have very strict ratios and we have, we can only charge what we can charge based on what parents can afford. And so we don't have a stockpile of savings to cover those expenses, especially during a crisis when you have to have PPE, you know, you have to have more staff and more equipment, if you will, and not the funding coming in. So, but then as we got, you know, advocacy and more lobbying to understand what was going on with our industry, we were given more money. And the last relief, the relief in December, which came from the federal government, we received in Maryland $130 million and $60 million went to direct grants. We're still waiting on those grants. We're in May and some people still have not received the grants. They're working on it. And so I guess we, you know, we'll continue to wait on those funds to help us to rebuild, you know, and get back some of the money that we, you know, are still struggling to keep our doors open and because of capacity still being limited. So that would be helpful.
Imani, did you apply for funding?
I did. I applied for the state funding. And in different jurisdictions, there was additional funding that people could apply for. In Baltimore City, we had another set of funding we could apply for through the Family League. And I know Montgomery County did something, Howard County. So quite a few of the counties did additional funding prior to this state funding that we're all trying to get our hands on. But as Chris said, with the EPIC and EPSA payments for those essential personnel, it took us almost 5 weeks to get those payments at all. So 5 weeks without any kind of payment was really tough. And so now limited capacity is still a problem. And there is grant funding that we don't have to pay back. And some providers did also apply for some of the Small Business Association loans. But when your capacity remains below what you need for your revenue, because it is a business, it makes it very difficult just trying to wait on funding through the state or any other person at this point.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Imani Angela Rose, director of the child care center Joshua's Place in Northwest Baltimore, and Christina Push, head of the Maryland State Child Care Association. We're talking about the obstacles providers are facing at this stage of the pandemic. Chris, how many of your members have closed their doors permanently since the pandemic started?
Over 650 have closed their doors since March of last year. And then there are some programs that are still keeping their license, but they don't either have children or they're not, certainly not at their capacity. So we have a lot of programs that are still teetering and hoping that they can recover. But you have to get through the crisis and stop the bleeding before you can move to recovery. So I think we're hoping that the funds, and again, we had the federal funds and now we have more federal funds. Maryland just received $500 million, which is a lot of money to rebuild. And so we really hope that stakeholders and our leadership in legislature, as well as MSDE, and as well as our associations can work together with all of the boots on the ground and in the industry and really use this money to rebuild and reimagine what's best for children, families, and these businesses that are providing this essential work every day.
MSDE is the State Education Department. And I take your point about getting through the crisis before recovery, but what are the implications of so many centers having closed? What does that mean in terms of actual slots for children going forward?
That's an access and an equity issue, right? So that means less slots and less accessibility for families, depending on where they're located across the state. We already have some deserts of childcare. So it would be when families are going back to work in person or school goes back and, you know, and they need this essential service, there would be obviously less slots. And as we look to the blueprint for Maryland education, and that was overridden, you know, this year in our session.
The veto was overridden.
Yes, it was overridden. And so that has implications for pre-K as well. Because we are diverse deliverers in public pre-K. We want to be. We need to be. If we're not, we will have to close more doors. So we really are concerned that there will be less programs available to provide the expansion of universal pre-K in our state as well. So there's a lot of variables that are part of this. And so we need to get it right. And we need to make sure that we have resources and better supports for parental needs, for quality care, to bolster the expansion of childcare businesses and to be able to improve the wages of our childcare workers, because we are in a crisis for workforce. I think that's true in a lot of businesses, but it certainly was an issue prior to the pandemic because of the low wages, but it is certainly exacerbated since the pandemic, our workforce.
Imani, looking ahead, what are your biggest concerns?
So moving forward, getting to a place where we could be at full capacity and not worry about any limitations in our centers. But in order to also help with that, as Chris was just saying, if we don't have the proper staff, because we have child to staff ratios, if those ratios can't be met because we can't find staff, it still puts us in a really sticky place. So one of the things would be looking at how we can pay providers a better wage so that people are willing to come back and come back into childcare strong and ready to do the work that we need to do to make sure our early learners are ready for school. That would be one of the biggest things right now that is resting on the shoulders of many of the providers. It's getting the staffing and qualified high staffing so we can provide high quality childcare for students, whether it's in a home or whether it's in a center.
There's a lot to do. I appreciate your talking to us about it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Imani Angela Rose is director and co-owner of the Baltimore Child Care Center Joshua's Place. Christina Push leads the Maryland State Child Care Association. I'm Sheila Cass. Glad you're with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.